Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 3-4-2 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias and all the hoopers, it's time to dunk it up.
Now, wait just a gosh darn. Where did the remix of the intro come from?
It's time to pop out and do stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, one of my favorite lyrics. There we go. All right. Well, by the time you are listening to and or watching this video, it will be Tuesday, which means it's time for more Emirates NBA Cup action. We have preview content for you as we just continue the chain of preview content on the channel. So check out everything that is there.
Oh, wait. YouTube, hi.
Where were your manners, Steve? There we go.
Hit the thumbs up button, subscribe, comment. Later on, Nikias will reveal his top two comments from the YouTube folks. So hang on tight. We're going to shout y'all out. Leave them below. We got y'all. Continue, Nikias, with some more talk about the NBA Cup.
Yes, we have more NBA Cup play happening. The Tuesday slate should still be a good one. I will say a little bit of a damper because of injuries. Kicking things off, the Orlando Magic and the Milwaukee Bucks. But no Paolo, as we already know, for the Orlando Magic. And now, more recently, no Franz Wagner with a torn oblique out indefinitely. So that certainly, it figuratively and literally hurts the Magic in that case. That's a lot of production out of the lineup. But still should be an interesting one. You still have a really, really, really good Orlando Magic defense heading into the matchup. 23rd on offense, 3rd in defense, 8th in net rating. And over the past couple of weeks, per Clean the Glass, 16th in offense, 4th in defense, and 7th in net rating. 6-2 over their last 8 games. The Milwaukee Bucks lighting the Nets on fire. And as we talked about recently, taking advantage of this schedule stretch. Overall this year, they are 10th in offense, 20th in defense, 15th in net rating per Clean the Glass. And over their last 6 games, 7th in offense, 23rd in defense. Got to keep an eye on that. But 15th in net rating. And I think heading into this matchup, it is going to be a one-off. But I'm curious to see what Orlando tries to poke at, specifically with Milwaukee's defense. I think without Franz, without Paolo, you don't have a guy that naturally draws two to the ball. I think the one game sample that we have over the weekend without Franz is Orlando playing a little bit faster, moving the ball side to side, certainly trying to get out in transition, and they got the three-point volume up. So I wonder if that continues. And if so, how much will we see Dame put in action? What is going to be top of the food chain there? Is it going to be Jalen Suggs? A lot more pick and roll for him. We have seen him create more this year. That's certainly going to have to perk up with Franz and Paolo out. Like, we've seen Cole Anthony reintroduced into the rotation in earnest. I would imagine that continues as well. A lot more hub work with the bigs. We just saw Goga Batadze just put everyone underneath the basket in their most recent outing. But can he do the same against Brook Lopez when he gets those matchups? What do the handoffs look like? So I guess my eyes start with Orlando's offense / Milwaukee's defense.
I go the opposite. Without Paolo, without Franz, it's going to be all about the Orlando Magic's defense. They're going to have to show up at a different level. I mean, the Magic may be without those two, but that defense is going to bring them to the dance. They're 9-0 when they hold opponents under 100 points this year. They're going to have to do their best to try and hold Milwaukee to that standard. And I think the one thing for Orlando is you do have that base defensively. So everyone who plays is familiar with what you want to accomplish on that end of the floor. Now you got to go ahead and get those stops, run, try and get some easy ones. Try and avoid as much of the half court as you can. Try and get your flow up. I think their big is going to be important. Pick and roll play is going to be key. So what can they get out of pick and roll? Is Milwaukee going to want to switch? Is that going to bog Orlando down? Can they get side-to-side movement? Do we see KCP involved in more actions? But I think it's going to be a committee effort. They got more threes up. The most interesting thing about that Orlando game against Phoenix, 42 made field goals, 17 assists. Mm-hmm. So they have some talent. They're going to have some movement, but there was a lot of self-creation from Jalen Suggs, from Jet Howard, from Anthony Black. So that can make it a little difficult in this type of scenario where, sure, they may not have what we're used to with Paolo and Franz. We're not sure what they're going to run to a degree. Mm-hmm. And all these guys know they're going to play. So there is an element of that in these type of games where guys go down. It's not easy. I would be wary, you know. Milwaukee's going to have to make sure they're locked in defensively. But Orlando, if they can't defend at a certain level, it won't matter because they won't give themselves enough wiggle room offensively.
Yeah, that's a really good point there. I was going to say, like, I wonder how much, not necessarily the lack of game plan, because obviously these teams prepare, but losing that amount of the offense from Orlando, like, what does that do for Milwaukee? Like, okay, what exactly are we focusing in on? What are some of these pet actions going to be now? And I think even looking at Milwaukee's defense, like, this isn't a team that's leaned super heavily into switching this year. Are they going to perk that up now? Do they feel more comfortable doing that? And if they don't land that, is that a way for Orlando to kind of generate some mistakes up top? You get two to the ball. Are they able to play against a rotating defense where Milwaukee hasn't been great? They've had pockets this year where they've been solid, but overall, it hasn't been a great defense for them. Like, is that a way for Orlando to find some easy within the half court? And to your point, if they are able to bog Milwaukee down, like, they do still have Jalen Suggs to toss on Damian Lillard, and there is still a lot of collective size and length in that front court for Orlando. Like, there still exists a world where they shrink the floor. We can switch a bunch of stuff off the ball. We flatten you out. If Milwaukee doesn't come in with urgency, if they don't come in and execute and play with a level of tempo, offense could get hazy. Orlando will get out in transition, and this becomes a really fun basketball game for the Magic.
I mean, we just saw, we're coming off a weekend where Milwaukee plays Brooklyn. If one thing Brooklyn's going to do, they're going to be annoying on both ends of the floor. So for Orlando, the recipe is going to have to be similar. We have to try and get the drive and kick when we can. Milwaukee's going to have to make sure they sustain their defensive efforts. We're going to have to try on the other end to continue to execute because Orlando's active. Orlando's got size. Orlando's got length. So this is one of those things where Milwaukee's got to be locked in. I think the one thing for Milwaukee with the return of Chris Middleton, it's been fun to kind of watch them mix and match some lineups. Hey, Brooke, you're at the five. Bob, you're at the five. Milwaukee being able to throw out Dame and AJ Green with Chris Middleton, Giannis, and Brooke. Well, that's a lot of different type of spacing, and we can use a lot of different people in different ways. Some of y'all can come off screens. We can go into post-ups one pass away. We can go to different pick-and-roll actions and try and space the floor in different ways, use the leverage of Middleton to open up a slip, you know, go inverted pick-and-roll with Dame screening for Giannis. There's a lot more things Milwaukee can do, and you kind of feel their lineups be a little bit more balanced rotation-wise now that Middleton's back. So that's something I'm keeping an eye on. But I mean, Orlando's, you're going to have to get Orlando deep in the clock. I mean, because they're going to mess around. This is not unfamiliar territory for them as far as having to find a way to generate offense. It'll be fun to watch.
There we go. And as you mentioned, Chris Middleton back. Only 26 minutes so far this year with Dame, Chris Middleton, and Giannis on the floor. It is a 133.9 offensive rating in those minutes, which is absurd. Like, it's just nice to see those three back. And, you know, you had videos posted on Blue Sky, the app that people are not allowed
sure,
to follow you
sure
at.
Sure didn't.
But as you highlighted.
You got the wrong loose.
The wrong Steve. But no, in all seriousness, like, using those three together, a different combination you can have there is a lot of fun. So it's just nice to see Chris Middleton back. Should add a level of balance to the offense and to the lineups in general. I think for Orlando, is circling back to mostly the offense. Because you mentioned KCP. Like, how much do you think his usage can be ramped up in this context?
It depends on what you define usage as.
I mean, do we see more staggers, more pin downs for him? Yes. Obviously, he's not going to be running, like, 20 pick and rolls. Like, yeah. That's not going to be.
If they want to run more movement stuff, they can fly him off staggers. They have the bigs where they can use them, have their guards cut off for handoffs. They have pieces to make sure things flow side to side. So I would not be surprised if in the half court, you see more of that. You see more of them running the action where I think Jalen Suggs or Cole Anthony starts in the middle of the floor. Looks like it's going to be Spain, or they slip a screen to clear side. They try and do stuff like that to generate offense. So I wouldn't be surprised by any of that. But again, I don't know how much of it matters if they're constantly in the half court and their defense is not causing havoc on the other end.
Gotcha. Do you have X factors for this particular matchup?
The X factors is the defense for the Orlando Magic. And then for Milwaukee, it's going to be Giannis Antetokounmpo. Do you have X factors?
Who's just been upset? For me, like, I think it's just Orlando's front court in general for many of the reasons you stated. Like, I think their usage being used as hubs, and they're obviously going to have to hold up against those rim attacks from Giannis. on the other end. So I look at Orlando's front court, and for Milwaukee, like, which version of Chris do we get? Because I think if he does get to like a close game late, and Orlando decides we're just going to start poking at stuff, like, you don't want Dame and Chris to be options for Orlando to kind of pick up with switches and get downhill and generate good shots there. So if Chris is able to hold up defensively, and naturally if he's able to knock down shots, be able to be used as the pick and roll guy, be able to post them up against smaller guys, as many as Orlando has, as they are a big team overall. I think I lean Chris on that front for Milwaukee.
So you're excited. You're excited about the NBA Cup. Is that right? You're juiced up, ready to go?
I am indeed excited.
All right, I'm trying to feel it. I mean, look, here's the thing, folks. You win, you get to play in Vegas this weekend. You lose, you get to play whoever lost this weekend.
That's true. It's pretty straightforward. All right, well, last question I have for you, unless you have any other thing that you're looking for in this one. Who do you have winning between the Magic and the Bucks?
What's at stake in this tournament, Nikias?
A trip to Las Vegas.
And
potentially more money.
The Milwaukee what?
Ah, I see. The Milwaukee Bucks. Well done. Well done. Well done. I will also be choosing Milwaukee, but I do think this is ultimately going to be a close game. Like, Milwaukee has gotten off to some slow starts, and if this is a game in which they turn the ball over and Orlando's able to build some momentum early, this could get incredibly hazy. And it's not like Milwaukee has had the best second unit production or the most consistent second unit production. It's going to be a big Bobby Portis game as well, I feel. But to your point, like, having Chris back be able to kind of mix and match some lineup should bring some balance there. I'm ultimately going to land with Milwaukee in this one. Let's move to the late slate game for Tuesday night. We have the Dallas Mavericks 3-1 in cup play against the Oklahoma City Thunder, also 3-1 in cup play. These two teams heading into the matchup. The Mavericks 4th in offense, 8th in defense, 6th in net rating per cleaning the glass. And over the last couple of weeks, 2nd in offense, 6th in defense, 4th in net rating. 7-0 during that stretch. The Oklahoma City Thunder up to 8th in offense, Steve. Shots starting to fall a little bit more. 1st in defense with a little bit of a gap. 1st in net rating overall. And over the past 2 weeks, 5th in offense, 5th in defense, 3rd in net rating. They are 6-1 during the stretch. These two teams have played each other, with the Mavericks getting a 121-119 victory back on November 17th. There was no Luka for the Mavericks. No center, really, or Alex Caruso for the Thunder in that one. Talking about names that were missing in the matchup. But the Mavs already 1-0 against the Thunder this year. And I think heading into this one, as we're going to get the full compliment in this matchup, one, I'm just really excited about this. A pair of Western Conference powerhouses facing off against each other. A pair of MVP candidates facing off against each other. Two really good defenses. I want to see, for OKC, like, what are they able to open up offensively? Can they puncture Dallas's defense? Can they puncture the help? Can they punish that help? Can they knock down enough shots to make Dallas do something else? And then how does Dallas counter from there? And for OKC, or rather for Dallas, excuse me, which version of Luka do we get in this one? It's going to loom large naturally. But what do the centers do? Because we don't have the full complement of centers for OKC, but you do have Isaiah Hartenstein in this matchup. A little bit more size on the interior should help on both ends, should help them generate different looks offensively, being used as a hub, being used as a screener, and defensively just having more size and someone that can help in possessions, which was a really big deal in their earlier matchup this year. The Mavericks out-rebounded OKC by 24. It had 11 more offensive rebounds during the regular season meeting. Can Daniel Gafford, can Derek Lively handily win that center matchup? Can they win that center battle? Can they punish OKC at the rim? Can they make it tougher for OKC to generate clean looks at the rim? And what do they do with the rebounding edge there? So I think broader strokes, that's kind of where I start with this matchup.
I mean, for me, if you're Oklahoma City, can you shake loose of whatever grasp Dallas has on you right now? Where we're going to switch, we're going to stay in front, we're going to show help, we're going to recover, we're going to rotate. And we're going to do this over and over and over again, no matter what you try, no matter who you put in the screening actions, no matter who's where, we're going to put our big on whoever we need to. If you do feel like you get a slip on the switch, we're going to rotate and be there on the help. Can OKC kind of get their rhythm on that? So I'm glad you mentioned Hartenstein potentially being a hub. Does that help them create some more movement in addition to screen, drive, kick, isolate? can Dallas, I mean, Dallas has seemed comfortable against Oklahoma City offensively. PJ Washington continues to play well against them. Kyrie continues to play well against them. So can you do something to take away what Dallas does? Part of OKC's hallmark is, okay, we're active defensively. This is a Dallas Maverick team, as we talked about last week. They have not just Luka, they have Kyrie, but they have wings who supplement and can attack in different ways. So if those guys are able to now get in the paint off of the rotations you might have to do against Kyrie and Luka, what does that put you in on that end? So I think it's a fascinating matchup because Dallas has been able to kind of just be so committed defensively to what they want to do. OKC hasn't been able to shake them. Not that they haven't had success, but Dallas has been so committed to it that you have to keep doing it over and over again. Mm-hmm. And now you have to deal with Dallas on the other end. So I think that's going to be the primary battle. But if I'm OKC, we've got to shake this off. We've got to get this off our back, and we got to try and move forward and let Dallas know, okay, it's fine, but we have an answer for it.
I think bouncing off of that, like, this really feels like a big and quick early apology in advance if I annoy you with this. This feels like a big Shea process game for me. I think we've been talking throughout the year about the Shea shot selection, more specifically, like, his comfort, his growing comfort with pull-up threes. I wonder how many he takes in this one in light of the kind of help and the layered help that Dallas is going to throw out. He's going to have to beat length. We're probably going to see PJ Washington on Shea once again. If not the primary defender, at the very least, he's certainly going to get his reps against him. He's going to have to beat length initially. He's going to have to deal with help. He's going to have to deal with Gafford or Lively at the rim. How often does he turn to that pull-up? Is he able to strike the right balance between using that as a counterpunch or maybe leaning on it too much and letting Dallas off the hook? And now OKC's on their back foot. And if Shea is able to knock down that shot, how many does he need to make before Dallas reacts, if they do at all? And if they do react, what opens up now with OKC? Does this become Shea just leading the dance all night long if he has that shot going? So, like, as I've talked about it recently, like, I am going to be keeping an eye on that one.
I don't know if that process affects Dallas with how committed they've been. It's not like Shea has not played well against Dallas. It's
not like Shea
has not hit an array of jump shots against Dallas. None of that has changed how Dallas has decided to defend him and the team. So if Shea's going to hit pull-up threes, fantastic. Keep making those. Who else is scoring? Are you driving? Who else is driving? Who else is making plays? Now, to your credit, the timeliness of these shots could become key. This is a close game, et cetera, et cetera. We're defending the drive. You pop us one. Yeah, of course. But I don't know if you're going to be able to bend Dallas's will because of how much they believe in what they do and how much success they've had with it. What you're going to have to do, and like even in that early loss, I thought OKC was decisive for the most part, but you had to keep doing it. That's the problem, you know? So I think for OKC, they're going to have to win this game on the other end of the floor. I think having a big will help them a little bit more than, oh boy, we're in trouble. Oh, let's try zone. Hey, let's hope this works out. You know, I think if they have a better base defensively, they're able to get out in transition, get some easy ones, take some burden off the half court, and now we don't have to deal with as many of those possessions. But as important as Shea is, they're going to need everybody, and they need some of these guys to be able to beat and make plays against this Dallas defense, just like Dallas is going to need their guys to make plays on the other end. It's fun. It could be superstar heavy, superstar laden, but both these teams have a formula, and both these teams have players that fit into it. They're gonna have to rock it out.
Yeah, that's true. To that point, you mentioned earlier, PJ Washington has had success against OKC. You talked a little bit about the defense, but in the regular season meeting, 27-17 for PJ Washington in that game. Kyrie with 23 in that game. Shea, to your point, again, has had success against Dallas, had 36 points and 8 assists in the regular season meeting, but ultimately Dallas was able to hold on to that one. And so I'm curious to see which others step up. Like, I wonder, I guess to that point, like, do we see, or I guess how aggressive will the cross-matching be for Dallas? Like, are we going to see some Gafford or Lively on, like, Lu Dort, for example? Do they trust anyone else to hang with, like, Isaiah Hartenstein?
I'm picking up what you're putting down. I don't know how much it matters considering how much Dallas is willing to switch. Mm-hmm. And also because of how much OKC is willing to put anyone in a screening action.
It's also
as
true.
As far as their guards. So, like, I get that, but 7 seconds in, will it matter?
Yeah.
you know, if you want to put Lively, like Lively's going to be cross match in transition, or he's going to be guarding someone. Guess what? That person's going to come up, set a step up, and now you're going to do what you're going to do, and we're going to do what we're going to do, and that's just kind of going to be it. So I wouldn't put it as like a game changer to a degree.
No, that makes sense. And I think related to that kind of cross matching or just mismatch hunting in general, like I would imagine we are going to see Dallas try to poke at Shea on the block. And I would imagine OKC is going to try to poke at Luka in space, which to Luka's credit, especially since he's come back, like the defense does feel a little bit better than where it was earlier in the year. He's going to have to hold his own in this one. One, if he's being caught up in the screening actions, he's just going to have to hold serve in space. But even beyond that, like he is, because of the size that he has, he's a pretty important part to some of the help that they load up. Like Luka's a low man is a pretty important piece to their defense. When he's locked in and doing what he needs to do, makes it harder for offenses to find openings to attack. And, you know, related to the offensive end, if Luka can crash down, get a defensive rebound, now he's just leading the dance in transition. Not always going to be a literal fast break, but now he gets to grab and go and attack early before you get set. That's where he's at his most dangerous. You mess up at all, he is generating something for someone, or he's just flowing into one of his own step backs or getting to the line. So the stars are really going to be in my eyeballs at the very least. Like I want to see what they do, how they hold up, how they respond, and ultimately who's able to lead the dance in this one. I'm excited. Also very cool for Jalen Williams, also going to loom large in this one. Like him just not having to play center in this matchup, I think is going to be helpful for him. That brother was fighting for his life. I just think back to the fourth quarter of that game. Again, like OKC able to force misses, but just ultimately could not end possessions consistently. And Dallas was able to eke it out. So a little bit more normalcy in terms of the lineups, I think. So that should be a fun one. Trying to think, is there anything else pressing from this one? Like, I'm just ready to see what this looks like. Not super excited about the banter that may come from this matchup, depending on, honestly, independent of who wins this one. I think there's going to be something.
Who cares? There's going to be something anyways. Let the people talk. Have fun. Enjoy. If you're not going to enjoy the game, enjoy it. Nor that. If that's what you do, enjoy it. Just don't bring it to my door. Live this life how you want to. I just think there's a lot more joyful things to do about it.
You know, that's fair. More people should be like Steve as we approach these basketball games. Steve, who do you have winning this matchup?
I don't get my X factor in.
You know, I didn't want to didn't want to step on you. Who are your X factors for this one?
I don't get an X factor in this game.
My fault, OG.
I think for me, OKC, who is three? Who is your number three? I think Jalen Williams and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, their self-creation, they know the assignment. That can expand if you're playing well defensively. You have a base offensively. Lou Dort gets treated a certain way in this matchup. And this is a Thunder team that's been rolling. Mm-hmm. Is it Cason Wallace making shots? Is it Isaiah Joe making shots? Is it Aaron Wiggins? Is it just having Isaiah Hartenstein and Alex Caruso in this specific matchup that has an impact that allows you to throw something different at Dallas? So I'd probably say the conglomeration of Hartenstein and Caruso to see what that impact is, because I don't think they got them specifically for this matchup. I do think they got them because of some things that got exposed in this matchup. I'd like to see what they are able to contribute in this matchup. So those are probably my X factors there. For the Dallas Mavericks, it is the wing stop combo trio, if you will. It's PJ Washington, it's Klay Thompson, it's Quentin Grimes. Mm-hmm. Those three, no matter who they play with, help elevate Dallas. And so when they are able to defend, and they're going to need to defend and contain the ball, they're going to have to rotate, fly around. Offensively, going to have to knock down shots, drive, make plays. When they do that, with how comfortable Kyrie is with this year and everything that Luka Doncic brings to the table, Dallas becomes a very tough team to deal with. Mm-hmm. So those are probably my X factors between those two teams.
Okay, good stuff. I think for me, it's probably in a similar vein as you, like who's the third, but like I go to Lu Dort in this one for OKC. I would imagine he's going to see plenty of Luka Doncic. This cannot be a foul trouble game or a random loose ball hip check into sideline. Now Luka's upset. Now here comes 14 straight points for Luka. Like you don't want one of those. But in all seriousness, he's going to have a tough time. What's up?
I think Luka comes to this Lu Dort matchup with that in the back of his brain already. I feel like it's been on site six of the last eight times they've seen each other.
Yeah, continue. That's probably fair. But yeah, Lu Dort is going to have his hands full. So he's going to have to hold up defensively. And naturally, whether he sees cross matching or not, Dallas is going to help off of Lu Dort. he's going to have to knock down threes. And in the event that he gets like a short close, he decides to attack the basket, he's going to have to make smart decisions as a driver. We've seen some pretty big shots for him, both outside and inside the arc, just over the last couple of years for OKC. I don't think they can afford a bad Lu Dort game in this one. Because I think if he is on, I think that for that accentuates what Alex Caruso can bring to the table. Like, he becomes more of an amplifier versus Lu doesn't have it. Now it has to be Caruso, who obviously elite in his own right and will defend literally anyone, but is technically smaller than Lu Dort. And so what does that do? If you have both of those two working in conjunction, it makes it a little bit more difficult for Dallas to generate stuff. And for Dallas, like I hinted at the front court, like that's just going to be a battle broadly. I probably lean towards Daniel Gafford in this one, just because of what he does on the offensive glass as a rim finisher. He's going to be camping out the dunker spot. If OKC can't contain, he's going to get some easy ones. And so I probably lean Gafford more than Lively in this one as an X factor, but obviously both of those guys are going to be important.
So you're a Gaff man.
I can't even hate. That's what makes me mad. I knew you were loading up for something. I just didn't know what it was going to be.
Shucky ducky quack quack.
Gosh darn it. Who do you have winning this game, Steve?
OKC's been rolling, so I would not be surprised if this is decisive win game, Alex Caruso impact game, Shea and Jalen Williams revenge game. I'm going to go Dallas.
Okay.
I'm going to stick with the boogeyman aspect for a little bit longer. I'm going to go Dallas in this one.
Okay. Well, darn. I was going to select Dallas, but now I feel contractually obligated to pick OKC just so we don't have the same pick for two games in a row. There has to be some variance between the two. So I will lean. I think it's going to be a close game anyway. But I'll say we get some late game Shea heroics. OKC ekes out a win. Which... I'm going to hear about this one later, but that's okay. All right, heading into the Wednesday slate, we have the Atlanta Hawks, who are 3-1 in cup play, against the New York Knicks, who were 4-0 during cup play. The Hawks and the Knicks have played earlier this year, a 121-116 victory in early November for the Atlanta Hawks. Zooming out with these two teams, the Hawks on the year, 16th in offense, 16th in defense, 17th in net rating. And over the past couple of weeks, they are 6-2. They are 12th in offense, 12th in defense, 12th in net rating, which is incredibly funny to see and also read out. The New York Knicks overall, best offense in the NBA right now, which means I can say my favorite collection of words. They currently have the highest offensive rating in NBA history as of today. But first in offense,
man, 17th. When is this going to be done? Man, this is three straight years. And a matter of fact, every team you give this label to ends up not being good offensively the next year. Due to the Kings, the Pacers, like, hey, man.
The Celtics were doing it for a little bit.
I mean, yeah, but they didn't finish, so they were fine. This is a curse.
Well, tell them to get fewer buckets. I don't know, man. I didn't do it. I didn't put the ball in the basket for them. But either way, first in offense, 17th in defense, 5th in net rating. And over the past couple of weeks, first in offense, 9th in defense for the New York Knicks. First in net rating, they are 5-2 during this stretch. This is very much going to be a point guard matchup for me. Big fan of Trae Young, big fan of Jalen Brunson. Those two are going to initiate a ton of action. Those two are likely going to be put in a ton of action. And so my eyes immediately go to how do they hold up? What are they able to generate? And I think looking at the Atlanta Hawks in that matchup, I think it was only 0.89 points per possession on any trip, featuring a Trae Young pick and roll in that first game, which was interesting. But then you like go back through that game and specifically go through those pick and roll reps. And it's some missed floaters. It's some missed catch and shoot opportunities. Like, I think the quality of look is a little bit better than what the number ultimately ended up being. But within that lens, the Knicks have been trying to find scheme versatility for Karl Anthony Towns all season long. In this Hawks game, you know, going back to the regular season meeting, they had him up to the level to try to get the ball out of Trey's hands or just to prevent him to turn the corner. They had him in a deep drop. The Hawks countered with who they had one pass away. Like, hey, let's run this empty side pick and roll. We'll put Dyson Daniels one pass away. Since that helper is now just going to be Jalen Brunson, we can still get downhill and we can still generate some stuff, corner kicks and things like that. So will Trey have the floater going? Like, that's going to be something looking at. But ultimately, like, how does New York defend Trey and ball screen actions? How well is Karl-Anthony Towns going to hold up? And for Jalen Brunson and for the Knicks, and it's honestly a question for both of those guys, but like, how much do we see the gambit of let me call this guy into the action, let's get a switch, and now let's get into the pick and roll? Because it was a lot of that for Trey using Dyson Daniels as a screener. It was a lot of that for Jalen Brunson to get Trey into the action and try to generate looks that way. How much of that gambit do we see, and how do the defenses hold up in that one? I think that's where I start.
I think the Knicks are a lot better offensively than they were when that game happened. I think there's a little bit of a mirror image to this matchup to a degree. Because, hey, that's a nice Trae Young you have. We have wings we can put on him. And Atlanta says, hey, it's a nice Jalen Brunson you have. We have wings that we can put on him. Well, nice big you have. It'd be a shame if we switched. Hey, same to you. So which one of these styles is going to be able to take place? I think the advantage for Atlanta, I think they can muck things up to a degree because of their versatility lineup-wise to be able to switch. I think it's going to be how much can they contain Jalen Brunson? How much can Dyson Daniels win that matchup? And then can you handle Karl Anthony Towns? What are you going to decide with him? You know, if it's Clint Capella, what's his coverage going to be early on? Does that get Cat in a rhythm? Now you have the wings to switch, but what does that look like? Do you cross match? Now is Josh Hart a screener, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that part will be fun. I'll just share this stat that popped me this morning. I think the Houston Rockets have 77 assists in the month of December. Mm-hmm. Trae Young has 52. By himself.
As that is neat.
I believe the only player, first player in NBA history to have 30-plus points, 20-plus assists, 5 made threes. He's pretty good. So it's going to be interesting to see. You mentioned the coverage. I think it's, to me, the rotations that are going to be key. Mm-hmm. And the thing with Trey this year is what's made him tough is kind of the blend of what he's doing. Okay, you're in a drop. You don't know if I'm getting downhill. I'm going to rejet, snake back around, throw the lob late, or find someone late. You don't know if I'm going to go ahead and, you know, it's not automatic. I'm going to my pull-up. I might go to a rescreen. I might continue to attack. I might find a gap somewhere else. So can they kind of put him in a little bit more of a box with what Atlanta has in totality? Because it's not just Trae Young and pick and roll. You got to deal with Jalen Johnson. You have to deal with the attacks of Dyson Daniels. Zachary Lee-Shahe is very aggressive. So, you know, can the Knicks find the defense against a team that's going to look to attack you over and over again? That's been their question all year long. Mm-hmm. Can Atlanta just stick around? I mean, I think that's the thing about Atlanta. They stick around. This is not the Hawks where they're down 20 and I guess it's over. Like, they're going to be there for the entirety of the game. So it's going to be on the Knicks to kind of find the pressure points, execute offensively, and then find enough defense to avoid this being like a track meet.
Also,
where's this game at?
I believe this game is in New York.
Uh-oh.
Ah, well.
Biggest heel in the world, Trae Young.
Trae Young come through the player intros with like a championship belt.
If you don't remember when he returned to the Garden? It's fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah, continue.
just lean further into the bit. But no, like I think going back to the matchup back in November, Dyson Daniels did a really good job navigating screens and just generally bothering Jalen Brunson. I think that also led to, hey, let's get somebody else in action first and let's see if we can have some fun. And related to that, because you mentioned Clint, a lot more switching when Onyeka was on the floor. And so if you're already going to have like Dyson or another wing on Jalen Brunson and now you have Onyeka, like they were more willing to switch, but then it did get a little hazy with, hey, how early can we send this help towards Cat? And even if we force the miss, our big is out there. Can we actually end this possession? Like Cat had, 16 rebounds in that November matchup. So like it is going to be a layered approach for Atlanta here. Like they're going to have to bother Jalen Brunson. They're going to have to force misses. They're actually going to have to end these possessions as well. To that point, the Hawks were able to win the rebounding battle in that game. So did it, but got to do it again if they're going to be able to eke this one out. Actually, related to Cat, I'll go back to the defense really quick. Like, how have you felt it progress throughout the year? It's just independent of this Hawks matchup.
I feel fine. The fact that they're willing to have him do multiple things is the win. Even if it's not great, the fact that we'll mix it up and we're not stuck in this one box, we'll do late switch, we'll do drop, we'll be at the level. That's the win for New York. You just need to be able to go to it at some point. Now, the problem for them has been we can't keep the ball in front. We're not pressuring the ball. Teams are attacking us. We have to help and rotate all the time. We still have to deal with size plus Cat and pick and roll. But there are elements to it that are tough. We've talked about that. I have not pointed at Cat and been like, oh no, this isn't going to work. The win is that they will try different things. The worst thing would be if all they could do is play a drop. And now the drop's getting beat. So I don't have an issue with it.
Okay. Figured I'd ask. Can I toss you a free throw real quickly related to this matchup? Whose second unit do you feel better about heading into this matchup?
The Hawks. By default, they got DeAndre Hunter and Bogdan. No disrespect to the Knicks. The depth is not their thing this year.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. I know. I think they said Jalen and Bogdan the last game, so I believe they should be ready for this one on Tuesday or Wednesday. Excuse me.
I imagine they will be.
They want the trip too. But no, figured I'd toss that one out there. Let's move into the X factors. Who are your X factors for this matchup, good sir?
Well, for the Knicks, feels like a Bridges OG game for me. They need those two to do big things on both ends of the floor. I think they're going to need them to be aggressive, make shots, mix in post-ups, be someone who could attack Trae Young or have a smaller matchup. They're going to have to be felt on in this game. I think for the Hawks, give me the bench duo in theory. Give me the DeAndre Hunter Bogdan. Those are two who can shift things. You know, when they're able to go, let's just say hypothetically eight deep, and you have that level of versatility within their wings, that can make it pretty tough, pretty interesting. When those guys are making shots, being aggressive on top of what the starting unit has done, it gets fun. So I'd say those two.
Okay. Before I give my X factors, can I ask you a Knick-related free throw? I think we'll dig more into this specific topic, if not next week, then certainly soon.
Sure.
But how close is OG Anunoby to being an all-star this year?
He's played very well. All-star is a little rich for me.
Okay.
In the East with the front court. There's opportunity. But I mean, has he been better than Paolo and Franz?
Like in a vacuum, no. But I think to your point about front court depth, like the fact that Paolo has only played five games, like that should in theory open up a front court or a wild card spot. Okay. Because we're dealing with injuries across the East elsewhere. Like,
now walk with me.
Okay.
Giannis, Jason Tatum, right?
Mm-hmm.
Has OG been better than Evan Mobley?
I don't think so, no.
Has he been better than Jimmy Butler?
No. Okay. I think he's been more available than Jimmy. I don't know if I can go like per possession basis, he's been better than Jimmy.
Okay. This is not an Embiid year because he's banged up.
Yeah.
Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, Jaylen's been better. But actually, look, I feel like the designation with Jaylen's always funny between backcourt and frontcourt.
Nah, I feel you. Scotty Barnes.
Scotty just got back not too long ago. So it might be a games play thing for him.
Maybe, but just in theory. This is the math for the OG Anunoby case.
Oh yeah, it's tough.
This is the math because it's not that he has not played at a level where he should be considered. I would not say that. You have to get out in front of these people, and when you talk about wild card slots, it sounds fantastic. And maybe he can get one because of the guard play, but I mean. If you're looking at East guards, Jalen Brunson, Damian Lillard, Donovan Mitchell, Trae Young, it's about four of those slots, right? Tyler Hero's playing pretty well. Cade Cunningham's playing really well. Darius Garland's playing really well.
I was about to say, you haven't said Garland yet, yeah.
So, I mean, this is the thing with the All-Star. Mm-hmm. And I do this. I have people like, OG would probably be someone I'd be like, yeah, he's having a really good year. And then you start to do the thought exercise. It's like, well, these things,
that's a lot of people.
Things dry up real quick. And then don't let the fans have a little wrinkle vote in there. And now,
because Lord knows, they will have a wrinkle vote in there.
Someone you didn't think was going to get a vote got voted in. Oh, boy.
That's up to the coaches to get the, yeah. Yeah, so, okay. Figured I would toss that one your way. As far as the X factors go, very much Mikal Bridges for me. I would imagine he's going to see a good bit of Trey. He's going to have to hold up and navigate. The switch is going to have to be clean. I would like for him to make threes. Like, it's cool that the midi really hasn't gone anywhere this year. But he's going to have to make some timely shots in this one. So just very quickly, I would say Mikal Bridges on the Knicks side. For the Hawks, like, I feel like Dyson Daniels is an easy one. I'd probably go Clint, honestly. Because I think best case scenario for Atlanta. Best case scenario for Atlanta is that Clint Capella is able to hold up defensively well enough to where you feel the full weight of Capella plus Onyeka off the bench. So you have that scheme versatility. You play a little bit faster with Onyeka in the game, etc. It doesn't quite work if Capella gets in early foul trouble and now you have to lean on 30 plus minutes of Onyeka. What does the glass look like at that point? Again, they'll probably be more willing to lean into switching with those lineups, but can the Knicks generate some good stuff on the back end there? So I would say looking center for Atlanta and Mikal Bridges for New York.
I dig it.
There we go. Steve, who do you have winning this basketball game?
I would not doubt Trae Young to do some very vicious things in the fourth quarter. I have the New York Knicks advancing.
Okay. I have the Atlanta Hawks advancing.
Well, considering you said that they would win the NBA Cup, I would sure hope that you did.
I got to stick with my prediction. But no, in all seriousness, I do think Trae's, you know, I am worrying less about Trae Young these days than I was a couple of weeks ago. I'll put it that way. Jalen Johnson again.
Can't believe you said that, man.
Look, man, the man took like 12 shots in three games.
The man has 98,000 assists. What you mean?
I'm just saying, I'm keeping an eye on it. Again, I ain't say he trash, he washed. I'm just like, hey.
Take your eye off it, big dog.
Anyway, I am rolling with the Atlanta Hawks, which leads us into the late game on Wednesday, final game of the Cup preview. We have the Golden State Warriors, who 3-1 in Cup play, the Houston Rockets, who are also 3-1 in Cup play. The Warriors have played the Rockets twice. They have beaten them twice. And looking this up, the Rockets' last win against Golden State came on February 20th, 2020. A 30-point win for the Houston Rockets. So if that's not incentive enough to try to turn this in your favor, I don't know what is. But I want to see what these half-court offenses are going to look like. I think that's where I start. More so with Houston, as they have been floating around a top 10 offense overall this year, all year long. And yet the transition offense just better than what the half court offense has been. And in this matchup specifically, Houston hasn't had the most fun against Golden State. Can I read you some numbers very quickly, Steve?
Sure.
So in the two games against Golden State so far this year, Alperen Şengün, 15 points per game, 48% from the field. Fred VanVleet, 12 points per game, 25% from the field. I think that's like 7 of 28 overall. Jalen Green, 21 total points, 21% from the field, 11% from three. That is not the end of the analysis, but like on a very basic level, can they generate easy looks? Can they actually cash down the looks that they need? I think Golden State is like uniquely equipped to bother what Houston has been trying to establish because they have guys that they are comfortable pressuring. Fred VanVleet pressuring Jalen Green. They can be switchable depending on what the lineups are. Obviously, Draymond Green can just roam around literally everywhere and muck things up. And because Houston generally isn't shooting well overall, and because they're also just going to play some guys that provide help points, it kind of lets Golden State play even more aggressively with their help. And that further mucks things up for Houston. And so I'm curious to see what kind of openings that Houston can generate versus just what they're going to have with some of the guys they have out there, because Golden State's going to help. Can they generate good stuff for them? Can they knock down shots? And for Golden State, I think it's more so related to Houston's defense for me now that I like think it through live. But for Golden State, you're going to have Steph in this one. So naturally, you're going to have to step up and hit. When Steph is not on the floor, what are you going to get to? Because Houston's defense, which is elite, has been very comfortable cross-matching. They've also been very comfortable switching when Şengün isn't on the floor. It has turned into a lot of ISO slash let's throw it to John Kuminga in like the mid post and let's see what happens. And that's where the most recent matchup becomes interesting. You know, throw Andrew Wiggins in the list as well. That's where the most recent matchup becomes interesting, as Houston is sprinkling in doubles. And I just wonder if they dial that down in this one. And if they do dial down the doubles and some of the help, what kind of looks will Golden State generate, especially when Steph is off the floor. I'm curious to see what the looks are going to be.
Probably the ones off movement like Golden State does, be my guess.
That's true. I mean, a lot of splits.
I think it's one of those things you touched on. I think this Golden State group is uniquely suited to take away some of what Houston has added offensively. So we love the movement. We love being able to use different people. When you watch Golden State play Houston, you see Alperen Şengün catch pushed out. You see anytime anyone wants to cut, Jabari, Jalen Green, Fred, two hands in your chest. We are going wherever you're going. You could see, you know, the actions for Şengün to get him sliced in the post. We're fine with that, you know, whoever the big is. So they haven't been able to necessarily put Golden State in a scenario where they're uncomfortable. Now, again, Steph hasn't played any of these matchups, so you wonder if maybe that's going to be the button they can use to try and open some things up. But even then, we've seen Stephen Curry switch onto things and then scramble them out. I mean, that's something they've been used to for a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the fact that the Buddy Hield was as active as he was and jumped off the page against Houston, and considering, you know, I know Golden State's been switching around the lineups, but they've had a pretty good base of who they want in there. Houston's going to have to work. But I think this is where Houston's got to be decisive offensively. They have a tendency sometimes to lower their tempo on their own. I think they need to not do that. Be comfortable playing late in the clock, but don't put yourself in a position where you have to against this Golden State team. I think you'll be okay. You have the defense to hang around. You have a defense to bother Golden State. That's to your advantage. But you've got to be more decisive on the offensive end and put some pressure on Golden State that way. Because I don't know if you're going to be able to pressure and get turnovers and get easy ones defensively in this type of game. You can get stops against this Golden State team, but I don't know if it's going to be the same imposing defense that we've seen at times from Houston. They're going to have to be ready for the fight.
Mm-hmm. Cause I think to that point, like, unless Golden State just comes out loose, like we have seen, that has been kind of the hallmark of all of the movement and things they do during the Kerr era. They will just have their games where we're trying to thread the needle on some of these splits and things like that. And if it's one of those and Houston's able to run out early, then sure. But like, generally, I do agree with you. Like, I do think Golden State is going to be a little bit more methodical. I think as I have questions about what the post touches are going to look like or what the ISOs are going to look like, the fact that they are comfortable saying, Fred VanVleet, very good defender. We don't think you're going to get a stop against Andrew Wiggins, or we don't think you're going to get a stop against Jonathan Kuminga. The fact that they are comfortable pressing that button, I think is interesting and can be key in this particular matchup. Like, I don't think that is something I want Golden State to just lean fully into and bog themselves down and leave food on the table and allow Houston to get those stops and run out. But like, they do have some options now that they're becoming increasingly comfortable with. So curious to see what that is going to look like. I'd imagine it's just Dylan Brooks getting the Steph matchup. Or actually, who would you put on Steph in this one? Is it going to be Dylan Brooks early, or do you go with Fred?
I'd probably start with Fred. Okay. You could go Dylan, but again, you have two wings that are willing to attack. So who's Fred going to guard?
Yeah.
If GP2 starts, then now GP2 is a screener. So, I mean, you can invert eventually. I don't know if you have to from the start.
Yeah, makes sense. Like, I would imagine the overall point, like, both will see some time on Steph, you know, barring foul trouble, et cetera, et cetera. But curious to see, like, how they start. I guess circling back to Houston really quickly, like, honestly, the Şengün portion is going to be really interesting defensively. Because, again, like, they've put Şengün on wings and just generally put them on non-spacers. Because of all of the off-ball things Golden State does, like, I do wonder how fruitful that's going to be in this one, especially since Steph is actually back for this matchup. I think that's going to be an important subplot of this game as well. Just how well is Şengün going to hold up? Where is he going to be, and ultimately, how well is he going to hold up?
I would assume Draymond, or insert big here, with the sprinkled in switch if need be. But I don't know if they'll put him on someone else to start. I'd probably let him guard Draymond, hang off, depending on how much pick and roll he's put in, that type of beat. But it'll be interesting. I mean, Steph's in it, so you're going to have to come up to the level. You're going to have to make multiple efforts, which I think will be the challenge for Şengün in this one, as far as, okay, I got to be up at the level. I got to get back. I got to get back up, that type of beat. So I don't know how much they can dap into it, but that's the fun of the game.
It is indeed. So I can hear you talk about that. It reminds me of, like, some of the Nuggets Warriors matchups from a couple of years ago, Well, that was a very pressing, hey, Jokic is probably going to be fine on the first one, but what's the second one going to look like? Can he get back up there, et cetera? So keeping an eye on Şengün on that front. Steve, who are some of your X factors in this matchup?
X factor to me is just defense for each team. Yeah. I have no specific players. I mean, Kuminga and Wiggins, they're probably going to need them to score. Houston's going to need the shot making from Jalen Green, obviously. But I think whoever's defense is able to impose their will to start, they're going to have the chance to take this one away.
Gotcha. I think on the Houston front, more of a question for me, because Tari missed the most recent outing. Has been out for a little bit. I think he's back on Wednesday, which obviously would be huge. In which case, like, I think he just becomes my X factor in this one, if he isn't available. I guess I'm torn between Jalen and Jabari, just for very obvious shot-making reasons. I think if Golden State is going to pressure the ball, is going to have the big in the draw. Like, Jalen's got to take advantage of that. Like, if he has space, he's going to have to operate within that and just kind of beat them over the head with pull-ups and mix in some drives as well. But yeah, shot making is going to be very important for Jalen Green and Jabari, naturally. He's going to be asked to switch out. He's going to have to navigate that well. And he's defended relatively well this year anyway. So, like, not that I'm super concerned, but in a matchup like this with Steph back in the fray, he's going to have to nail it, because if he doesn't, could get kind of hazy. He's going to be very important to having that collective size and that help on the back end. So they're going to need him. For Golden State, probably Kuminga for me. I think the drives and just the complementary scoring is going to be very important. And again, going back to some of my questions about the Steph-less lineups, like, I think he's going to be a big part of those. If he can hold serve while Steph is off the floor, that's going to be put Golden State in a really good position. So I think that's where I land. Steve, who do you have winning this matchup?
The Golden State Warriors.
Streak continues. Okay. I want to believe, like, the lid just opens up for Houston a little bit more than it has been in these matchups. And, like, in a vacuum, they do just have so many people that they can throw at Steph and just at the Warriors in general. And the Warriors' offense has been a little off kilter over the past, like, 2 weeks. Like, I want to pick Houston. I just don't know how much conviction I would have in the pick, to be honest.
Pick Houston, big dog.
You know, we'll roll with Houston. I think the defense is going to be there. But ultimately, they will make some shots on Wednesday. I think they'll actually make shots on Wednesday. We'll say Houston gets it done.
There we go.
All right. Before you completely move out of the NBA zone, any other teams you want to shout out for this recent stretch of play?
I would like to talk about the Miami Heat.
Okay. What we got?
I would like to circle back to the Miami Heat, because here's the thing. A couple weeks ago, quietly pointed out what the Heat were doing, and they have taken care of business. I believe they've won 7 of the last 10. The starting lineup, Nikias, of Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Jimmy Butler, Haywood, Highsmith, and Bam Adebayo, 7-2 on the season. And so what I like about this for Miami is the way things are kind of just coming together on both ends of the floor for them. I think offensively, you might have a common complaint about Jimmy Butler wanting to shoot the ball, but now you can just have more of a blend. Like, you can mix in him initiating. You can use Bam and Haywood Highsmith as screeners for Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson to get off ball action. I think you can move the ball side to side more. You can kind of get more advantages and just kind of do random things. You've seen Jimmy as a screener, Jimmy in handoffs with Hero and Robinson. You've seen Duncan Robinson turning the corner and attacking. Like, that's good for Miami. It's more of a blend than just, hey, we have to do this. I think the possessions where you have Duncan starting a set by setting a screen for someone, now it's a kick, or Duncan starting a set and he's getting a screen, now he kicks to Tyler Hero. It's a swing to Jimmy Butler. Now Tyler Hero does a ghost screen, and now they keep playing out of that. They're getting to more of those type of plays. They're getting to more drive and kick. They're also getting to more cutting. And when Miami has that kind of element, they're pretty tough. You always have to pay attention to the cutting with Miami. You never know what they're going to do on the weak side. So when they're not just stationary, that's where they can generate different things. I think what also helps that your top three players are playing pretty well offensively at the current
moment. Certainly helps.
Jimmy Butler, over his last 9 games, 21 points, 5.9 rebounds, 4.7 assists, shooting 62% from the field, 58 from three, 83 from the line. So the Heat on the season are 7-2 when Jimmy gets 8 or more free throw attempts. They're 6-2 when he scores 20 or more points. So I think that helps a lot. You don't need me to tell you how good Jimmy Butler for the Heat is. I think the interesting one is Tyler Hero, though, Nikias. And okay. I think the big one for Tyler Hero has been way more decisive. And that's been so key for Miami this year. I think he's done really strong work in pick and roll. I think, you know, he's taking what the defense gives him in these actions. He's taking the space. It does not feel predetermined as it has in the past. He's mixing in way more rejects. He's understanding the kicks that he has once he forces helps, getting downhill and pick and roll, seeing where the big is at, understanding where the kicks are. The shot making helps, but when you can make a team pay and drop in a couple different ways, that's really important. You know, having a better understanding of when Bam's going to get open in the pocket, how he can help Bam get open in the pocket. Mm-hmm. Not automatically going to the snake, but working to keep the dribble alive, trying to re-engage the defense. You know, that's the kind of stuff that you want to see. And that process has been good all year long. I will note, we'll be interesting to see what happens if and when the teams decide to hit the two on the ball button once again. Will this actually be a win for Miami, or will this be where things shift? The one thing for me, guys, it's not just pick and roll. I feel like there is a better comfort for him looking to just attack one-on-one in different scenarios when he gets the ball out on the perimeter and being able to draw help or get paint touches in that way. And so earlier today, I went on the old NBA.com, guys.
Okay.
I went to drives per game. Do you know where Tyler Hero is in drives per game?
Ooh, I do not. Is he in the top 20?
He's 20th. Tyler Hero is 20th with 13.3 drives per game. Now, it's time to pop you, guys.
Okay.
Do you know who has the same amount of drives per game as Tyler Hero?
Is it Jimmy Butler?
Giannis Antetokounmpo with 13.3 per game.
Huh. Yeah, I wouldn't have had that on the bingo card. Well, you know, Giannis has turned into a mid-range master right here, so.
I'm going to Euro past that. You know who Tyler Tyler Hero is ahead of in drives per game as of right now?
Who is he ahead of, Steve?
Franz Wagner, Jimmy Butler, and Anthony Edwards. So just something to keep an eye on. I want to talk about Bam Adebayo a little bit too, right?
Okay.
I don't think Bam has had quite the year some had expected offensively off the Olympic campaign, shooting 43% from the field. I think it is something to do with the elements of what Miami is working towards and what they're working with offensively, mixing in things of what he's done successfully around it, if that makes sense. His usage is 21.9. Last year was 24.7. It was 25.1 2 years ago. Here's what I would say, right? Mm-hmm. I think Miami being able to move Bam around the board is important. He might be at the knuckle spot. He might be spaced in the corner, might be spaced on the wing, might be in pick and roll. He might not be. Bam's a little bit all over the place right now for Miami, which I think long-term is a good thing. I think short-term, you don't have the same, we're doing this for Bam, unless Spo kind of dials it up to a degree.
Yeah.
I think the 2.9 three-point attempts a game, that's career high. So that has changed some things a little bit. I think he took a total of 54 threes the last two seasons. He's already taken 63 this year. I think coming into this year, Bam had made a total of 23 threes in his career. He's already made 21 this year. So I think there's a shift for Bam. So I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole, right? Mm-hmm. I went and I was trying to figure out where the shift was for him offensively. Just looking at shooting zones. You know, I keep it basic around here. So restricted area, he's still shooting 62%. Last year was 68. He's at 62.5 this year. It was 30.8% of his field goal attempts were in the restricted area. It's about 28.9 this year.
Okay.
I think the big difference is the in the paint, the non-restricted area paint shots.
Those push shots.
50% is what he made last year. And that was 46.5% of his field goals attempted. He's at 37.4 this year. That's at 40.3% of his field goal attempts. Mid-range, he's taking less of them. It's only 10% of his field goal attempts as opposed to 18 last year. He's making more of them, percentage-wise. Mm-hmm. The threes.
Big jump.
Huge jump. They account for rounding out almost about 20% of his field goal attempts between corner threes and above the break threes. Mm. 14.8 are above the break. Last year, 3.4 of his field goal attempts were above the break threes. So I think we see the shift is he's not finishing some of the push shots. He's shooting more of the threes. There's a little bit of difference there. So I think that's kind of something I just trying to wrap my head around. Not to excuse it, you got to make shots. But I do think there is an adjustment period to where overall, I think this will help Miami. But you just got to kind of find a little bit more of the base, find some of the finishing in the paint. The other part with Miami, the defense is showing signs of life, Nikias. This team has always been at their best when they're active, when they give multiple efforts on that end. I think having Haywood Highsmith and Jimmy Butler have that level of activity, be able to contain, that just takes strain off the help defense, takes strain off Bam Adebayo when they can navigate screens. And so if you go empty side, I don't necessarily have to get up to level. I don't have to be in a drop. I can recover back to mine. He can recover. Like you saw Phoenix and Cleveland try and hit that button, and Miami was able to contain. Miami can kind of just work to funnel things towards the paint. And if there's a three, we'll kick, we'll get back out and we'll rotate, but we can kind of stick with our base to a degree. You end up with these actions and these times where Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson just kind of have to do their job because of who they're out there on the floor with when it comes to starting lineup. Be active, try and do your work early, try and contain, funnel if you have to. There's help behind you. And when you look at the help, it's Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, and Haywood Highsmith. And they're pretty good at either just jumping people, showing help, or being able to rotate behind it. So I think one thing that was important for me, especially in that Cleveland game, conceptually, like early, they switched Tyler Hero and Donovan Mitchell. No hesitation. Duncan Robinson just ended up guarding Darius Garland. He gets a handoff. Duncan fights over. There's help that's shown, but no one overcommitted. No one sunk into the paint. They just kind of let it rock. That's important. So the willingness to switch those two, combined with the activity, that's solid. And I think Highsmith's consistency on defense really helps because in theory, you have three players that are a comfortable switch or great helping or great navigating. Mm-hmm. And you add the, what Drew Smith has been able to do over the last few games. There's a base as far as having a defender that's out there. I think one thing, this might just be off Miami. So much of defense comes down to multiple efforts. It comes down to being able to execute your schemes and comes down to picking your poison, but you just have to keep going. It's not going to be a perfect world. You have to believe in what you're doing. You have to have an understanding of what you're trying to take away, what you're willing to live with, and put yourself in a strong position to sustain and maintain that. That's what I felt from Miami. You know, I think too often we look for defense to be a perfect world and ignore some of our design. No matter how hard you try, you're not going to be able to take everything away. Can you make it difficult? Can you take them out of what they want to run? Do you understand what you're doing? Can you recover based on your own mistakes? Are you playing team defense? I think that's where it's at with Miami. So, I mean, it's not a perfect world for the Heat, but I think you can really understand, like you can sense the identity during the stretch. And I know Heat culture jokes fly left and right, but I don't know of many more teams that identity is more important to than the Miami Heat. I'm going to quote my friend, the great Cooper Moorhead, from the after the buzzer on YouTube, go look it up. In which, you know, he quoted the Heat are always working to get back to some version of their same identity. You know, they've always known who they want to be and what they need to do to get to what they want to be. Always, it's always what they've done.
That's what they do,
and you can sense the belief in it, and you take that and you grow from there. So they're gonna have to show consistency. They're gonna have to show they can maintain on both ends against great teams. They're gonna have to show they can elevate against the best teams, but they put themselves in the spot they need to.
That is really good stuff on the Miami Heat, sir. Like, it's funny probably isn't the right word, but like, I just think through the years of the podcast where I get frustrated with the Heat during some of these stretches where they're trying new things and it isn't really working. It's like, well, hey, I'm not saying it's cool, but this doesn't look good. And you always taught me off the ledge with Miami. It's like, hey, like they're just working on stuff. They're just trying to get to where they get to and they're going to be fine. And more often than not, they do end up fine. And so this has been a really good stretch for the Heat. Just bouncing off of some of the things that you said. You mentioned the starting lineup and the record since they shifted to that starting lineup. A plus 47 in 118 minutes with Hero, Duncan, Butler, Highsmith, and Bam on the floor together. That is really freaking good. They're shooting 42% from three during those minutes. But more importantly, we just zoom out. A 126.1 offensive rating with that lineup on the floor. A 107.4 defensive rating with that group on the floor. If Jimmy's back and engaged, if Haywood Highsmith is doing a little bit of everything, if Bam is operating as well as he is in the drop and also just getting his hand on a lot of passes and getting some deflections on top of that, and if Hero and Robinson do their jobs, like that's steady. And then you just have all of that floor spacing and movement around Bam, Jimmy. Highsmith can attack closeouts. And as you mentioned, the cutting is always going to be there for him. Like they'll just have him lurking around the dunker spot too. And so you just get easy stuff there. And circling back to the Hero Robinson portion, because that is a combination that can't speak for the entire, you know, like I'll speak for myself. Like it's something that I've been intrigued with because of the shooting and the ways they can be used and how does that open up things for Jimmy and how does it open up things for Bam. It hasn't been something that Eric Spoelstra's wanted to go to a ton, like barring injuries to other people, because of teams saying, oh, we can poke at Tyler and we can poke at Duncan. And if Miami's switching a bunch, okay, let's move Bam over here. Now let's get one of these two in action, or both of them, depending on who the team is. And now we're just going to have fun and we're going to generate good stuff. And so smaller sample so far, obviously we are in December right now. But last year, the Heat had a 117.9 defensive rating with Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson on the floor together. That is not good at all. So far this year, that is a 111.3, which is roughly like it's a top 10 mark if you extrapolate it. I don't know if that particular bit holds, but like if it's a midpoint between this and what it was last year, then that combination in particular becomes more feasible. And I think even to the defense point, very basic level, it feels a little bit different when Tyler Hero is the smallest player on the court for you. Like Duncan, certainly not an all-world defender, but if he does his job, like he is like a legit 6'7", 6'8". And so if Tyler has, who's been working really hard defensively this year, if he's holding serve, you have more size alongside of him. And then again, as you mentioned, Haywood on the back end, Jimmy on the back end, the pick sixes are back for him, Bam Adebayo on the back end. You could shrink the floor a little bit better. Like as Miami is a team that is willing to show help from either corner. If it's a bigger body or a longer body, like that does restrict a little bit more space for opposing offenses. That helps. And then again, you get the benefits offensively there. To your Hero point, Tyler Hero, currently one of 10 players, or nine if you exclude Paolo because he's only played five games, but one of 10 players averaging 24, 5, and 5 this year. We just talk about the overall evolution of what Hero's been this year. And him and Nikola Jokic are the only two players on that list that are doing that while also shooting 40% from three. So he's in really good company. Naturally, with Duncan Robinson in the starting lineup now and Haywood Highsmith in the starting lineup. Terry Rozier coming off the bench, 11 points, 3 boards, 2 assists. Shooting 43% from three coming off the bench. You recently mentioned some of the fourth quarter exploits for him. And so like that feels more natural. Like one of the questions I had coming in was we're going to get a larger dose of Hero plus Rozier. It's more so like, how's it going to hold up defensively? Because like you can see the skeleton of Rozier can touch the paint a little bit better than Hero, catch shoot opportunities, et cetera. But you split those two guys up. Rozier still gets to do his thing. Tyler Hero has continued to evolve, as you mentioned. You have that. And sticking with the second unit, Drew Smith just firmly in the rotation over the last four games. The Heat 3-1 in those games. 7 points, 4 boards, 2 assists and a steal off the bench for Drew Smith. Shooting 58% from three during this stretch. Also, more offensive rebounds than defensive rebounds for Drew Smith during this stretch, which just speaks to him being willing to mix it up literally anywhere. On both ends of the floor, but him just skying in and getting random stuff has also been a lot of fun. But the Heat are plugging away, man. They're plugging away. And then very quickly on the Bam front, he shot 50% or better in three straight games, which is the first time he's done that since mid-November at Detroit and then those two games against the Pacers. So if Bam's able to find a level of consistency, you certainly take that. All right, that caps it on the Heat. I would just say very quickly, a shout out to the Minnesota Timberwolves. We will dive into them on a later episode, but we see you. Defense has been absurd. Wolves starting to figure some stuff out. The loss against the Warriors notwithstanding, but quick hat tip to the Wolves. Can I quickly talk about Nikola Jokic?
Sure.
So, interesting weekend.
The EST of the NBA?
He certainly feels like it, man. Like, over the weekend, in a loss to the Washington Wizards, which, hey, you certainly don't want that if you're the Denver Nuggets, but 56-16-8. For Nikola Jokic. And then he followed that up, not even 24 hours later, with 48-14-8. He is averaging a 30-point triple-double. He's darn near leading the league in rebounds and assists. And he's not that far off the scoring part. He's been insanely efficient on top of all of this. Like, I just don't know what to do with this Nikola Jokic season. Like, this is the most consistently aggressive that I've seen him as a scorer. Like, he's always had this in him. But he's just actively hunting. Like, you've talked about some of the HP Dive late in games. But, like, he just... I like this matchup. Give me the ball, please. I will do it. So on one hand, I'm super impressed. On the other hand, it's like, hey, this is a lot of like Jokic effort for early December. Maybe effort probably isn't the right word, but you know what I mean. Like, this is a lot of super aggressive Jokic when in theory you would like for him to pick his spots with the scoring portion specifically. When you have like Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So like you would like to see a more collective effort. They've had bodies in and out of the lineup. So that obviously plays a part. But Nikola Jokic is absurd. He's absurd. I think this is shaping up to be a wild MVP race. We're not going to do full-blown MVP talk today, but like this is shaping up to be an insane between Jokic, what Giannis has been doing. Like, again, had the Bucks episode. This looked kind of hazy. And Giannis has said, actually, I'm just going to be the best player in the world, or at least the best player in the East. And we're just going to get this right. His numbers have been absurd during this recent stretch for the Bucks as well. Shea, Tatum, it's going to be a lot of fun. But hat tip to Nikola Jokic. And while I'm thinking about centers, quick shout out to Jakob Poeltl, who's just quietly averaging a career high in points and also rebounds. And the Raptors are doing a lot more handoff stuff and elbow touch stuff with Jakob Poeltl. So their assortment of guards and wings can just kind of cut off of him, play off of him. But to the scoring portion, like he is really just seeking out shoulder bump, push shot. You can't do anything with this. And just as a basketball watcher, I'm not sure what to do with this because like surely this isn't going to keep up, but maybe it does. I don't know. He's always been a really good screener. He's always been a solid passer for the position. I feel like the defense has kind of dipped, at least reputation-wise, since he's been in Toronto. But like we know he can protect the rim. But I'm kind of enjoying like Jakob Poeltl getting a lot more usage. Like this is fun. Like utilize him. Help open up things for everyone else. So just some quick center love on the player shout-out front. And speaking of shout-outs, can transition to these YouTube comments.
Let's go! On the block with Nikias! We promised it last week. Leave your YouTube comments. Nikias will read his top two that he enjoyed. So make sure you drop them down below. Nikias, who did you post up on the block this week? Sponsored by Insert Sponsor here. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. What's up?
There we go. Number two on the list for me was a little bit petty. I'll be honest. A little bit petty in the Duncan household here. I think it's legit sniped. The comment that says, no one ever talks about the Rockets. It's all good, though. We are going to ball regardless. And while I do appreciate the heart and the fervor defending the Houston Rockets, who have been good this year, as I replied in the comments, like, yes, people do talk about the Rockets, including us on a prior recent episode of Dunker Spot. So that link is still there. So we'll put that there. As far as my favorite comment, it's going to come from Crab Photographer, which interesting display name there, who says, and I quote, Stephen Whittingham Jones Jr., you know darn well, then to call Terry Rozier Clutch Player of the Year and Nikias Maxwell Duncan, you know darn well better than to concede any ground on this. So in the in the interest of heat talk on this podcast, I guess Mr. Crab Photographer did not enjoy the Terry Rozier Clutch Player of the Year free throw during the segment last week.
Shout out, Crab. Hey look, Nikias, you look me in my eyes, all right? You better come with it next week or I'm going to do the comment segment. And you don't want me to do it. I promise you. You know that. Time to shoot free throws, big dog.
Okay, what you got for us?
Do you have any free throws?
I do not.
117 straight weeks.
Oh, okay.
I don't know who has a longer streak, Goldberg or you not having free throws. Let's see. Zach LaVine or Paul George?
Well, LaVine's been better this year. So I still rather have PG, but
okay. Cam Johnson or Lauri Markkanen?
I think Cam's been a little better this year, honestly. I'd rather have Lauri, but shout out to Cam Johnson.
Jalen Suggs or Mikal Bridges?
Probably Suggs.
Okay. Peyton Pritchard or Norman Powell?
Ooh, I like that. Norman Powell. Shout out to a couple of career years, by the way. Norman Powell and Peyton Pritchard doing the thing. I'll go Norm.
Tyrese Maxey or Kyrie Irving?
That's gonna be Kyrie Irving for me, at least right now.
Jalen Johnson or Pascal Siakam?
you're not going to like my answer. I think it's Jalen.
Okay. Auburn Shingun or Evan Mobley?
That's going to be Evan Mobley for me.
Anthony Simons or Malik Monk?
Ooh. Lord. Oh. The answer should be Anthony Simons. However, this has at least felt like a really good Malik Monk year. This is one of those things where, like, when I've seen Malik Monk, he's been very good. And I'm going to look at these numbers after the pod. I'm like, oh, no. I'm going to go Malik Monk.
Okay. I respect it. I made a request from a listener.
Okay.
Old Sandro44 on the old Sky of the Blue.
Oh, there we go. They found your account.
I don't know why they would. Someone keeps continuously mentioning it. Don't do it.
Okay.
Smile. Jalen Green or Cam Thomas?
Cam Thomas.
Santi Aldama or Obi Toppin?
This is very dunker spot peeled. Wow.
Yeah, true dunker that, Sandra.
That's incredible. I'm going to go Santi Aldama.
Right. James Harden or Damian Lillard?
I think James has been better this year.
Jaren Jackson Jr. or Evan Mobley?
Ooh. Darn. Let me go Jaren for now.
Right. Jalen Williams or Franz Wagner?
Good gracious. We'll go Jalen Williams.
Okay. Peyton Pritchard or Deuce McBride?
That's going to be Peyton Pritchard for me.
Kyrie Irving or Jalen Brunson?
Darn. Jalen Brunson.
Jeremy Grant or Michael Porter Jr.?
Oh, God. Michael Porter Jr.
Nikola Vucevic or Clint Capella?
We'll go Vooch.
Okay. Do you know who is number one in the NBA in made three-pointers?
Number one in made three-pointers? Is it Anthony Edwards?
Team-wise.
Oh, darn. Okay. Is it the Knicks?
Do you know what team has made the most threes in the NBA this year?
Oh, God. Oh, the Boston Celtics, surely.
Okay. Do you know who's in second?
Okay. Do I know who's in second? I'm going to once again guess the New York Knicks.
The Chicago Bulls.
Darn.
So what's more surprising? The Bulls being first in the league in pace, fifth in the league in points per game, or second in the league in three points made per game?
Well, it's absolutely the threes for me.
Yeah, everyone makes this whole revolution about threes and the Celtics and the historic rate they're shooting it at. The Celtics have made 456 threes, and the world loses their mind. And no one points out that that's only 38 more than the Chicago Bulls. Oh, okay, I have a final one for you, Nikias. I'm sorry. Okay. Can you tell me who won the Big Ten championship in football?
The Big Ten. Is this Oregon?
This man said, is this Oregon? Of course it's Oregon.
The question well, that's what the. Listen, Christ. You're asking me to. Listen, we got freaking SMU and the ACC. Frankly, I just don't know where half of anyone is. This was not intended to be shade. Like, I didn't know.
Nikias, with the amount of college football that you have played video game wise, I imagine you know everyone's conference.
And here's the thing, Steve. The funny thing about the Dunker Dynasty, when we get out of here, we've all changed conferences so many times.
Before the Dunker Dynasty, you played that game. I don't believe you. You need more people.
Well, what I need to do is thank our dear listeners and watchers for checking out the latest episode of the Dunker Spot podcast. And that's what I'm going to do. So we appreciate y'all. Subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already, the Young Man 3 account. We are here every Tuesday, and we also have just a lot of great content on the channel throughout the week. So check that out. We're here every Tuesday, and then we have the audio-only episode every Friday, sometimes Thursday, but we do have the second episode later in the week, so check that out. Subscribe to the pod if you haven't already. On that note, Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can follow me on Blue Sky and the Caius NBA. That is the only thing that I am contractually able to say without getting a knock at my door.
Don't do it.
I don't want to see another crowbar, so I'll leave it there. Check out the Dunker Spot online watch party.
If you haven't already. Links in bio, man. Whatever you're saying, it ain't gonna happen.
Okay, well, ignore him. Click on that link in the podcast description. If you have a League Pass account, you can watch basketball games live with us. Live thoughts, get some breakdowns in between breaks. Ultimately, we do just let the hair down. We chill, we chop it up, we laugh, all the good stuff.
We don't have hair.
Well, come to the watch parties. We have fun. We'll catch y'all later in the week.
Hey, Nikai, you know who's on my shirt?